Dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, Prashanti is getting crowded and crowded every passing day as the holy festival of Guru Purnima approaches. And the weather in this hamlet too is becoming cooler. The summer heat has begun to recede and there is soothing breeze, especially if you take a stroll inside the ashram in the evening after the bhajans. The ambience inside the ashram and outside the ashram, I would say, is always very different. Those of you who have come to Prashantinilam would have probably felt the same, I'm sure. I remember staying in Bangalore for an year and a half when I was working in Bangalore Swami's hospital in Whitefield, and every Sunday when I came to Prashanti, when I stepped inside the Ganesh gate, I always felt that stark difference. There is something about the place which has the power to calm your being, which makes you feel like you've come home, which quietens your mind. And I personally believe that no stone, no shrub, no tree, no tile, no sand, no shadow inside the ashram is without any significance. Everything has been physically, personally crafted and created by the divine, and it indeed has tremendous significance. Take for example the Vatavriksha tree, the huge banyan tree to the south of the ashram on the slope of the mountain. In fact, last Sunday there was a function on 29th of June, function under this tree wherein ritualistic offerings were made accompanied with Vedam and bhajans. It was the 55th anniversary of this blessed tree. And it is a blessed tree because of what Bhagwan has invested in this pond. Many years ago, one day in the month of April in 1959, Swami was with the devotees on the sands of Chitravati River, and Bhagwan started speaking about the Buddha and the Bodhi tree under which Lord Buddha attained enlightenment. And Swami went on to say how sadhakas, spiritual aspirants, seek some specially favorable spots for their tapas, for their meditation. And even as Bhagwan was speaking thus, he put his hand into the sands and out came a thick copper plate, 15 inches by 10 inches. And in it were mystic markings and letters of many known and unknown alphabets. And then Bhagwan went on to explain how such mystic plates are called sasanas, and these are planted under the trees where sadhakas do penance so that they may be helped as they strive to attain concentration of mind and mastery over the senses. And after this, Swami revealed how he wanted to place that sasana that he had created under a banyan tree that he proposed to plant in the Tapovana, the forest for penance. And this indeed was done by Bhagwan on June 29th, 1959. And what is most significant is Swami on that occasion also mentioned that yogis and seekers who have reached a certain stage in their penance will with time automatically come to know of this tree and this sasana, this plate that he has placed. And Bhagwan said they will be drawn by a mysterious force towards this tapovana. And then Bhagwan said this place will fully justify its name. In fact, dear listeners, let me share with you something that I experienced firsthand during Christmas 2013. I remember talking to a young Sai devotee from South Africa. She was just 24 years old, and when I asked her what is it that she really liked in Prashantinilam, I spoke to her in the studio. What is it that fascinates her about Prashantinilam? What is it that she likes to do the most in Prashanti? And you know what she told me? She said her pull to Prashanti is the Vatavriksha tree. I was so taken aback because, first of all, this was the first time I was hearing this from anyone. And it was not from a spiritual seeker, it was not from a yogi or a sadhu or someone who has taken sannyas. Nothing of that sort. It was from a 24-year-old professional who had just begun to work in a marketing firm in South Africa. Well, that is what makes Prashanti so magical, the ideal place set up by our Sadguru for our spiritual growth. As they say, if you are in Prashanti, it is inevitable that you will grow spiritually, because this place is just designed only for that. This place may or may not give you anything else, may or may not give you any comfort or convenience or chance or opportunity or even a good darshan sometimes. But what it will definitely confer on you without fail is, it will contribute to your spiritual progress. It is indeed the sadhana sthal of everyone who steps inside. And that is the unique gift of our Sadguru, Sai Sadguru. And to me, this aspect of Swami as the Sadguru, as the unmatched preceptor, as the most exalted divine master that we can have, this captures me completely, because I feel whatever Swami may be to us, mother, father, friend, whatever, ultimately he is only our Sadguru, who is interested only in our spiritual progress and nothing else. Whatever he does or he does not do, whatever blessing he confers or he does not, seemingly does not, are all for this purpose alone, for this purpose alone. And therefore it is so important for us to recognize this and realize this and appreciate this, so that we can learn our lessons faster, with less trouble, less pain and more joy. Just look at Bhagavan's life. His avataric mission started with the bhajan which had the line, Sai Nath Sadguru Jai Jai, the fourth line of the bhajan, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. So clearly Bhagavan was telling right from the time, 1940, he is telling, regard me as your guru and I will take you across this ocean of worldly existence. Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam Dustara Bhavasa Karataranam. At this point, I'm really tempted to pause and let us just listen to this bhajan and immerse ourselves in this bhajan in the voice of Bhagavan himself.
मानस भज रे गुरु चरणम दुस्तर भव सागर चरणम
मानस भज रे गुरु चरणम दुस्तर भव सागर चरणम
मानस भज रे गुरु चरणम दुस्तर भव सागर चरणम
मानस भज रे
Arunachal Shiva, Arunachal Shiva, Arunachal Shiva.
When Bhagwan started giving divine discourses in the 50s, in one of those very early discourses, Swami referred to this bhajan, how he started his mission by singing Manasa Bhajare. And Swami said in that discourse, I call on all those suffering in this endless round of birth and death to worship the feet of the Guru. The Guru that was announcing himself, who had come again for taking upon himself the burden of those who find refuge in him. And then Bhagwan goes on to share very powerful messages. He says, I do not need your flower garlands and fruits, things that you get for an anna or two, a paisa or two. They are not genuinely yours. Give me something that is yours, something which is clean and fragrant with the perfume of virtue and innocence and washed in the tears of repentance. He says, garlands and fruits you bring as items in the show are an exhibition of your devotion. Poorer devotees who cannot afford to bring them are humiliated and they feel sorry that they are helpless. They cannot demonstrate their devotion in the grand way in which you are doing it. And then comes Bhagwan's direction. How to worship him? How to adore this Guru? He says, install the Lord in your heart and offer him the fruits of your actions and the flowers of your inner thoughts and feelings. That is the worship I like most, the devotion I appreciate most. So such are the beautiful messages of the Sadguru. This is the very first discourse in the Satisai Speaks. If you open that volume, this is what Bhagwan says. In the last two sessions of Outside Inside, Deep Inside, we've been trying to do this. We've been trying to dwell on these messages of the Lord, looking at Bhagwan's life and learning the characteristics of a Sadguru as enumerated by Bhagwan himself, and then understanding that in the light of what Bhagwan has said, and in the light of how Bhagwan led his life. So we took the divine discourse that Swami delivered on Guru Purnima of 1985, where Bhagwan elaborated on the qualities of a Sadguru by reciting the famous shloka, Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dvandatitam Gagana Sadrisham Tattama Shadi Laksham Ekam Nityam Vimalam Achalam Sarvadhi Sakshibhutam Bhavatitam Trigunaraitam Sadgurum Dham Namami. So we spent some time dwelling on each of these profound attributes of the Sadguru, and this is what we'll continue to do today in this fresh episode of Outside Inside Deep Inside, as you listen to this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and we are here for a fresh episode of continuing this discussion on the preceptor unparalleled, and like in the previous episodes, with Bhagwan's divine blessings, I have with me in the studios two guests, one from the college and the other from the school, Mr. Venkateshwarlu sir from the Sri Satya Sai High Secondary School and Brother Sai Giridhar from the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Venkateshwarlu sir teaches mathematics in the school and he's been there right from the inception of Bhagwan's school in Prashantinilayam, while Sai Giridhar has had the chance to do his graduation and his post-graduation, now currently pursuing his PhD in Bhagwan's University in the Department of Chemistry. Thank you so much, sir, and Brother Giridhar. Welcome to this program.
Thank you.
So let's take on from where we left off last time. We spent so much time discussing about just the attribute of the Lord being bliss himself, Brahmanandam. We went on to Paramasukhadam. And in that too, I think every line had so much for us to just dwell on. I think we could spend hours just taking one attribute of the Sadguru. And if you just take this Paramasukhadam, you know, Bhagwan, when he's explaining this attribute, the last sentence, Swami says, the person who is ever aware of the Atma in him and in all is therefore the Sadguru. So Swami is saying the person who is ever aware of the Atma in him and aware of the Atma in everyone, he alone is the Sadguru.
Yes, very much.
So this is something I thought is something really to dwell on. Because what I'm reminded of is this beautiful incident which Raman Rao sir narrated to me. You know, Raman Rao sir is currently the editor of the Sanatan Sarathi, and he is someone who had this tremendous opportunity of serving Bhagwan at close quarters for many years. And he was, if we had come to Bhagwan, had the darshan in the 80s, we would have seen him
Walking behind Swami,
quote unquote, assisting Swami, yes, with letters. And I mean, he was in fact one of the very first Sevadal members that Bhagwan inducted in the Satya Sai organization. So he was telling that many years ago, during Guru Purnima celebrations in Prashantinilayam, one day Swami was extremely busy attending to thousands of devotees who had come for the celebration. And that morning, he saw that when Bhagwan retired to his room, it was already very late, because Swami had spent a lot of time going around so many groups of devotees, distributing prasadam, granting padamskaram. And when Bhagwan retired to his room, he saw that Bhagwan's robe was wet with sweat. And Swami really looked visibly very tired. And he was just waiting for Bhagwan to retire, and once Bhagwan gave permission, so he returned, and constantly thinking in his mind that, you know, today perhaps Bhagwan will rest a little more, because he really had a very long morning. And so generally he used to go in the afternoon by 3, and Swami would come out 3:30, something like that, and then they would go out for darshan. Bhagwan would go out, he would follow Swami. So that day he sort of lazily went at 3 o'clock, expecting Bhagwan to be still resting, but as you can now think, you know, he was shocked, because Bhagwan that day was ready and fresh at 3 o'clock. In fact, Bhagwan was waiting for him. Bhagwan was ready at 2:30 itself. And it was completely contrary to what he had expected, because it was such a tiring day for Bhagwan. And he thought Bhagwan deserves at least that much rest. Probably Swami would have retired by 11:30, 12, and you know, he would have hardly rested, and again there's a long day ahead. So that day, of course, he was at first shocked that Bhagwan was already there waiting for him. So he immediately went and, you know, he took his place at Bhagwan's feet and started massaging Bhagwan's lotus feet. And then when he got a chance, he just pleaded with Bhagwan and said, Swami, you already had such a busy morning and you had your lunch so late. You were so tired. And now again you want to step out, Swami. You hardly had time to relax. Swami, please do not go for darshan today. please, Swami, today you please take rest. And the moment Swami heard this, he instantly retorted. Swami said, rest? Rest is rust. Have you ever seen me taking rest? Change of work is rest, Swami said. And when he told me, what occurred to me is, I mean, the only one in this world who is beyond the karmic cycle, who has no obligation to work, as Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has no obligation to work, but he is incessantly working on his own volition. And here we are, we have so many rights and responsibilities and duties, and many times, you know, we want to take it easy. I mean, there was that profound lesson there. But what happened was, of course, Ramana Rao sir started telling me how he had the chance to sleep in Bhagwan's room for 40 days in 1993. And at that time, he told me how he saw that Bhagwan actually never slept, because he was sleeping in Bhagwan's room. And, you know, there was the slightest moment, or if he went out of the room to visit the restroom or something, Bhagwan would be always alert. So I had never really seen Bhagwan sleep. And so when Bhagwan said that, have you ever seen me rest? It just occurred to him, like a flash. I mean, how true it is, how he has seen Bhagwan, that facet of Bhagwan. But, you know, that afternoon, still looking at Bhagwan's condition, he said, Swami, please do not go out for darshan. It's okay, Swami, please take it easy today. Do not go out for darshan. And then again Swami shot back, and now Swami said, you think all these people have come for my darshan? Are they here so that they can see me? Wrong. Absolutely wrong. And he was wondering, I mean, if all these people, they have not come for Bhagwan's darshan, if they have not come to see Bhagwan, then why have they come from wherever, all parts of the world? And then Swami looked at deep into Ramana Rao sir's eyes, and then he said, it is I who is going to have their darshan. They have all come at my instance so that I can see them.
Beautiful.
And so Swami said, see, of course, the moment Swami said this, the word that came to Ramana Rao sir's mind, he was very frank. He said, the word that came to my mind is atishayokti. Atishayokti in Telugu means exaggeration. I mean, he thought, I mean, it sounds so funny. I mean, Swami is telling that, you know,
I am going to
have people darshan. Swami is sort of, you know, simply exaggerating stuff. That's what the word that came to his mind, atishayokti, Swami. He didn't say it, but that's the word that came to his mind. And Swami immediately looked at him and said, atishayokti, you think this is atishayokti?
He means every word.
He means every word. He was really shell-shocked. Then Bhagwan told, see, when I go amidst the devotees, I don't look at their bodies. I see their souls.
So true.
Swami said, see, when I see them, I see their past, I see their present, I see their future. I think I have designed for everything what I should do for each one's future. And I'm going there only to execute this. I mean, it is, when you think
great
about...
Great revelation.
Yeah, it's a great revelation. It's amazing. It's like everybody is here because he has called, and he wants to go because he wants to do what has to be done for that soul. And that is the reason why he has to go. And this is a Lord who has no obligation to work, but he wants to work constantly. And then, even before actually Ramana Rao sir was, you know, it was too profound for him to really fathom what Swami was telling at that time. Even
particularly
before,
for people who had very close association with Swami.
Correct.
They were deluded by that power of Maya.
Yes.
As a result, sometimes they used to consider him to be like them.
Correct. Exactly. That's what he says, you know, when we look at Bhagwan, especially people who are serving at very close quarters, you tend to think of him as human. But here is the Lord, the Divine, who refuses to look at us as human. He wants to look at us as the Divyatma Swarupa. As that, and Bhagwan went on to tell him, see, every time I speak to you, I address you as Divyatma Swarupa Lalas. I do that. So do you think I do this simply to praise you or to please you? Swami said, I mean every word when I say that you are all atmas, and that is how I always see you. Unfortunately, you see me as a body, but I always see you as the atma. So, when I was reminded of this incident, when I saw that explanation that Swami is giving of Parama Sukhadam, where Parama Sukhadam is, if that is that beautiful quality of the Sadguru who sees only the Atma. He sees the Atma in everyone and in everything. And that is the, I think that is the cosmic splendor. That is the cosmic consciousness. That is the cosmic form of the Lord. The Vishwarupa.
In fact, I remember one Ganesh Chaturthi.
Yes, Kirti.
When we had gone up with a program on Navaveda Bhakti to Swami. And Swami inquired, what is the program? We said, Navaveda Bhakti. And what Swami asked us was quite intriguing. In the sense, Swami's first question was, are you saying that Vinayaka is beyond Navaveda Bhakti? So, we had not planned for it, and our whole structure was such that we were trying to describe the various worship of Lord Ganesha as we know it in the culture of Bharat and also worldwide through this Navaveda Bhakti. But Swami's first question was, are you saying that Vinayaka is beyond Navaveda Bhakti? So we said, Swami, no Swami, but if Swami says, we will tell. You know, that's how we were ready to echo Swami's words, to be his mouthpieces, but we really didn't understand what that meant. Then further when Swami explained, Swami was saying, Chudu, Vinayakudni gudilo chuste akade untaru. If you see Lord Ganesha or Vinayaka in just a temple or in your altar, then he remains there. Kani Vinayakudni atma rupamlo chudali. Swami said, you have to see Vinayaka in the atmic form or as the Atman. Appudu anni chotlo untaru, meer ekkada poyina akkada untaru. He said, then Vinayaka will be found everywhere. Wherever you walk, there is Vinayaka with you. So, that was one wonderful lesson which Swami gave about how we should alter our perspective. Swami always says that you can raise a stone to the level of God, because God permeates everything, but never bring down God to the level of stone.
Exactly. Wow.
So this perspective of seeing Vinayaka as the Atman, and hence that Atman is all pervasive and ever present right now here. So moment that perspective comes, like we discussed, last Thursday, one of the senior devotees said, all that we need to do to remain in Swami's presence and feel His presence and connect to Him is simply develop this implicit faith that Swami is the Atman and hence He is right now here.
Yes.
And as this faith grows, we recognize that Swami is here with us right now, this very moment.
Wow.
In fact, that experience is bliss.
Absolute bliss.
In fact, that reminds me of that one experience which was shared by Brother Venkatesh Prasad, wherein one day he was sitting in front of Trai Vrindavan, and they were waiting for Bhagwan's darshan, and before Bhagwan came out, there was this elderly person who was sitting next to him, and he out of the blue asked him, how do you know that Swami knows everything? Now Venkatesh Prasad was not in a mood to actually start a conversation, because they were sitting right in front of Bhagwan's door, and any time Bhagwan can come out, and that is the last thing you want to be caught in doing. But this person was insistent. So Venkatesh Prasad said, well, Swami knows everything because He's God. He said, how do you know He's God? I mean, Swami says that, but how do you know that He is God? He said, no, I just know it. Swami has told. That's it. He said, no, that is fine. But how do you experience that Swami knows everything? Now, Venkatesh Prasad did not know what to do with him because a very elderly gentleman. So, he just thought best thing would be to just tell him, you know, okay, you only tell me. And now the elder devotee said, see, when an ant bites you, how do you feel the pain? How does your hand feel the pain of the ant which has bit your toe? He said it happens instantaneously because the whole thing is connected. Then he went on to explain, you see, you have seen pictures of
Vishwarupa.
Vishwarupa, exactly. You have seen drawings where, you know, you would see, for example, a picture of, say, Mahavishnu. You would see Vishnu. Mahavishnu has four hands and 1,000 heads and, you know, so many hands and so many heads and all that. So he says, what does it mean? It only means that he's there all over. His eyes are there everywhere, his hands are there everywhere. So when his eyes are there everywhere, his hands are there everywhere, his feet is there everywhere. So whatever happens, it happens in him. It is all part of him. It is all, everything is just subsumed in him. He is the substratum on which everything happens. So obviously he will know. Just like an ant bites your toe and the hand knows. Similarly, anything that happens in the world, he would know. And that is the reason why he is God. And Venkatesh Prasad says, it was such a profound moment that day, that thank God he allowed that person to, he asked that question. And the story doesn't end there. The moment he got this realization, Swami opened the door. And then Swami comes near him and then Swami grants him Padmaskar. As if almost telling him that this is what I wanted you to get today. And I'm so happy you got it. And he says after this, his perspective of life changed so much. Never for a moment he really felt that, you know, Bhagwan, you never think that how will Bhagwan know this? Is Bhagwan aware of this? Should I write this? Should I pray for this? And those questions don't come because there is nothing that is beyond what Bhagwan
is
exactly. So right. And I think that perspective really, I think it will just fill you with bliss inexplicable. And we have seen that in Bhagwan. And that is the reason why I think Bhagwan is all the time in bliss.
He has seen himself in everyone.
Exactly.
Serving anyone, he never felt he is serving somebody else, but he is serving himself. There was an occasion when Swami has taken up the mega water project of Chennai, and once it was completed, when in every household there was pure drinking water which was denied to them for a decade or more, many devotees from Chennai happened to come to express their gratefulness to Swami. They were all made to sit in a group, and when Swami came out to give darshan, the group leader got up to express their gratefulness to Swami for all the wonderful service which Swami has extended to them, and how happy the people of Chennai were getting pure drinking water at their doorstep. But even before he could say a few words, Swami stopped him, saying that no, it is me who should express thankfulness to you, because by you have given me an opportunity to serve you.
Wow.
So true it is that he finds his own self in everyone. He sees himself in everyone. And anyone he served, he felt that he was serving himself. And that is the lesson he driven in all the devotees time and again through various discourses and through various experiences. He wants us to experience that anyone whom we are serving, we are not serving somebody else. It is our own self. This is one profound lesson we learn. And this experience, the moment we realize it, realize the truth of this, we are in such a blissful state that we don't feel like coming out of it.
And you feel so happy, right?
Happy about it.
When you get a chance to do an act of selfless service. I mean, many times people are shy away from doing selfless service, thinking, you know, what's in it for me? But when you look at it from this perspective, you think that there is all in it for you. I mean, if you do an act of selfless service, that is the greatest thing that you can, you know, give yourself. As someone said, you cannot help another person without helping yourself.
Correct.
It's impossible. It's impossible. Correct. And Swami Vivekananda,
because the kind of joy which you find in the other person,
correct,
to whom the help is extended, that comes as a blessing.
Yes.
And when you experience that blessing, without your knowledge, it fills you with bliss.
Yes.
It is a thing to be experienced, cannot be explained in words.
Exactly.
In fact, I remember even during this 2001 Gujarat earthquakes, Swami had sent around 50 odd truckloads of relief material to Gujarat.
Yes.
And even as Swami was flagging off those trucks, we were in Mandir, and one of the senior devotees seated there went up to Swami and said, "Swami, what a wonderful seva is this." Then Swami asked him a question. Swami said, "Do you have children back home?" He said, "Yes, Swami." "See, when they fell down and hurt themselves and they were crying, what did you do?" "Swami, I ran to them, picked them up, nursed them, and, you know, consoled them, cajoled them, and, you know, gave them sweets and other things to make them happy and ensure that, you know, they overcome that small issue of theirs." Then Swami said, "Is that a big service you did to them?" So immediately the senior devotee was taken aback, and he was alert to receive that message of Bhagwan. And then Swami said, "Idina panira," he said. "This is my work," Swami said.
Wow.
"Just as if something which is part of myself, you know, is hurt, it is my duty to nurse it and, you know, take care of it. It is something which is very natural. Just as you said, if a thorn pricks the leg, the entire body feels the pain. It's not just the leg. In the same way, Swami's heart pours out in compassion moment he sees something like that." We saw the same thing happen with the genesis of Gram Seva as well.
Yes.
Swami just saw a newspaper clipping where it was written that a mother and child, you know, who did not have food to eat, the mother poisoned the child and herself partook the poison, and both of them passed away because of dearth of food at home. And Swami just read that article and his heart was so moved that he declared that Gram Seva must begin as part of the university Seva, and all the students must participate in the Gram Seva. And we all could see how moved Bhagwan was physically just by reading that article. We would have read that such articles day in and day out.
Yes.
But what Swami exemplifies in his human form is that how sensitive one must be.
Yes.
In recognition of the fact that the entire cosmos is but part of one cosmic self.
Yes.
And that is my true nature. And Swami always exemplified that. He saw the entire creation as part of himself. And anywhere there was suffering, we could see a visible sense of compassion and deep pain in Bhagwan.
Yes.
Where he would sense the other person's pain and suffering as his own.
Wow.
And that is the most practical lesson I feel in Advaita, which Swami had visibly shown it to us.
Amazing. In fact, I'm reminded of what Ashwin, former student working in Swami's hospital in Whitefield, he once said that in an interview when he was with Bhagwan and Swami was mentioning about the coming up of the hospital, you know, Swami had just announced the coming up of the super speciality hospital, and all were wondering from where money is going to come from. No one had any clue. Physically, it almost seemed like even Swami didn't have any clue. He just made that announcement. And then in the interview, this discussion came and Swami was saying that, you know, this hospital has to come up and I definitely want to do this hospital. Then Swami, at one point in time, Swami said, "I am willing to do anything for the poor because these people have to be benefited." Swami said, "I am willing to auction myself. I don't care. I'm willing to auction myself, but this hospital has to be built." And that was the extent that we saw, what great length to which Bhagwan is actually showing us. I mean, how much sensitive we should be, and you will automatically be that sensitive, if you feel that oneness, if you feel that connectedness with everyone, I think that will come so naturally. Like Bhagwan once, when Warden Sir told Swami, Swami is so much shrama, you know, because Bhagwan had finished the evening aarti, Bhajan Sarova aarti was over, and then Bhagwan was retiring, then suddenly he came. And then, you know, there were a few talks, Swami asked a talk, and there was, Swami blessed a few boys and all that. So, given that Swami again had taken so much pains to be there and all that, Warden Sir said, Swami, you have taken so much shrama, Swami. And Swami immediately said, idi shrama kadu bangaru, idi prema. Idi shrama kadu, idi prema. This is not, I have not exerted myself, this is just a spontaneous expression of love. This is just a spontaneous expression of my love. So I think, again, that pure love is such a powerful facet. And I think in some ways, if you see, all the attributes of the Sadguru will just subsume into that unique aspect of divine pure love and compassion.
At this juncture, basically he wants us to do the same thing which he has been teaching all through.
Yes.
His sojourn. He wants us that we should be like him.
Yes.
The way he used to love people, we should love people. The way he used to serve people, we should serve people. That will automatically transform us into him.
Yes. Absolutely. And he has taught us how to do it. And if you see the various messages that Bhagwan has given, you know, in one of the attributes of the Sadguru is Jnanamurtim. He is the one who's the embodiment of all wisdom. And I feel the amount of clarity that Bhagwan has given us with all his messages is something so phenomenal. I mean, just the very fact that we are discussing this such a profound shloka is only because Swami has given us some guidance in his discourse to discuss.
One of the attributes in the shloka is Kevalam. He is beyond space and time.
Yes.
And I think that is one of the reasons why people from all over the world could come to Swami.
Yes.
Because he responded to people from all over the globe. He was beyond space and time. I remember one beautiful incident in this connection. Almost 4 decades back, this particular incident was narrated by Professor Kasturi in one of his satsangs. He says that in San Diego in America, a lady was living alone in a flat in a huge building. She had arthritis. One day at about 11 o'clock in the night, she had a terrible pain and cried out, "Is there no one? Anyone, someone to come to my help?" Next moment, Swami appeared near her cot, though the room was bolted from inside, patted her and said, "Why do you shout so loud? I am here." It is such a wonderful assurance. So everyone must know that there is Swami now. He will respond. From whichever place we call out to him, with whichever name we worship him, he will be by our side, extending his help, assuring us that he is with us all around.
Amazing. In fact, that reminds me of a very similar thing. I was talking to one person by name Richard Lugner. In 2012, during Christmas, he had come.
Oh, he's the one who teaches Tai Chi in Australia?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He was also a former tennis player.
Yeah, he was a former Wimbledon. Level tennis
player. Yes, yeah. Yes. So he used to play sometime in the 90s. And after that, of course, he's moved into many other, his Tai Chi, and of course he started a business, and of course he's done many things after that. But in 2012, sometime in August, so many things were going wrong in his life that he was really at the nadir, and he thought, I just cannot continue like this. And so he decides that it's better to just quit. And the suicidal tendency was so much that, you know, he actually called up the Austin helpline. And they have this facility, you know, suppose you are extremely depressed, you can call this line. So he called up, but there was no response. He waited for...
He was put on wait, that's
yes,
what he says.
Yes, yeah, he was put on
wait. He was put on hold.
Put on hold. And there was no response, and that is when he calls out to that, if there is any God, if there is anyone who is God, this is the time I need you now. And that is the moment when he is suddenly enveloped with a beautiful fragrance. And later he realized that it's all Vibhuti fragrance. And that thing does not leave him for another 3 days. It is constantly there. And then his eyes fall on Sai Baba, Holy Man and Psychiatrist, the book that was given to him many, many weeks ago. It was always lying in his house, but he had never ventured to read. A friend had given him. But then he starts reading that. And then so many things happen. So many beautiful things happen. His mind changes completely. He falls so much in love with Bhagwan and his teachings that he's here. In 2 months, he's here in Prashanti. He spent 10 days Christmas...
doing the decorations.
Doing the decorations, Australian yes, group. With the Australian group.
Yeah. He, in the year?
2012, after Bhagwan's... I mean,
Mahasamadhi.
After Bhagwan's yeah. Mahasamadhi.
I mean, such a great assurance to all
yes,
the devotees.
Absolutely.
In absolutely. Fact, he was sharing one more experience of his. He was somewhere in the lawns, in the garden where... Suddenly he felt this fragrance, you know, the Swami's Vibhuti fragrance. And he was wondering if, you know, that there was some perfume around or somebody was passing by wearing a perfume. He looked around, there was nobody. And he was wondering if this is Swami's presence. And so he decided and he prayed to Swami, that Swami, I'm going to take 10 steps ahead from here and stop there. If this was your fragrance, a mark of your presence, please give me another experience of that. So he takes 10 steps, moves ahead and stops there. And he says, as if Swami had taken a handful of Vibhuti and hit on his face, you know, thrown the fragrance on his face. A huge a gust of wind carrying that fragrance hit his face. And he said, the kind of bliss that he experienced after that was something he could not describe. That was a very, very real experience. And he said, there I could feel the presence of Bhagwan just by a simple prayer. Swami,
yes.
Please give me the assurance that you're here for me.
Yes.
And there was the Lord, you know, giving his assurance to this devotee in his own beautiful
way. Magnificent way. And what is most important is, I remember from that conversation is, you know, when I was talking to him, it almost felt like I was talking to a monk. And here is someone who wanted to commit suicide just 2 months before. Because all that he had studied, you know, because he was doing Tai Chi and all that Tai Chi, etc., have a lot of philosophical content.
Yeah, it's got a very deep
meaning.
Spiritual foundation.
Foundation. So everything that he had learned had suddenly begun to make profound meaning to him. So now, you know, he almost sounded like an enlightened being. I mean, this is what can happen to you at any moment. The touch of the master can do anything to you at any moment. And in fact, he's talking about this beyond time and space. Again, I'm reminded of one more very beautiful experience which was shared by Raman Rao sir. You know, when sir started coming to Bhagwan in these very early years, in sometime in the 70s, and he started making frequent visits to Parthi, and that's when his father actually gets very apprehensive. So he feels, what is this? This person, my son, is neglecting family, is neglecting everything, is frequently...
Family deity.
Yeah, family deity, yes. Family deity, and he felt that there was one point in time when Mr. Raman Rao was not into spirituality at all. He was like... He was an atheist. He used to spend all his time partying and doing all the things that any normal...
And father was not disturbed about it.
Yeah, and that's what he says. At that time, my father seemed to be much more disturbed about my frequent visits to Puttaparthi than that time when I was an atheist. And sort of quote-unquote enjoying the world. But his father actually sends a very strong letter saying, see, I'm seeing that this strange behavior and I want to warn you. See, we have been worshipping Lord Tirupati, and Tirupati
for many generations.
And Lord Balaji has been giving us whatever we want. So there is no need for you to unnecessarily go after another God-man and, you know, start...
Put us in trouble.
Trouble, you never know. And he says that, I am much senior to you and I know about all these people. So you take my advice and don't go after all these people who call themselves as God-man and all that. So, Mr. Raman Rao, he was thinking what to do now. And that, interestingly, just a few days after that, when his father was in the train, next to him, there was another very respectable gentleman. He was actually a judge in the Andhra Pradesh High Court. And his father saw that this person is reading a book on Swami. So his father thought, this person is reading a book on Swami? It's very strange. So they start talking about Swami. So his father was now a little open to it. The Swami must be something, because if a judge of the High Court is reading about Swami, which means he's not someone you can just simply dismiss. So when Raman Rao sir came to know about this, he thought this is the best opportunity. There was a slight opening, so he said, you know what, you come to Parthi, I will take you. And so that's what he does. So he brings his father and he also brings his mother along. And his mother actually had a serious health condition wherein she could not have control over her urinary bladder, and that is the reason why she would never go anywhere, because it would be very uncomfortable and it would inconvenience others. So she would never stepped out of the house. But somehow Raman Rao sir convinced both his mother and father to come for that trip, and Bhagwan was very gracious to grant them an interview as soon as they came. And the first thing that Swami did is, as soon as they entered the interview room, Swami created vibhuti and gave it to the mother, and Swami said, from now on, your problem is cured.
You can go anywhere you wish.
Yes, you can go anywhere you wish. No more problem. No more uncomfortable feeling. No more inconvenience. And next came the father. And where Swami created a talisman. And when he gave it to the father, he asked, do you remember this? And his father was speechless. Because this was a talisman which was given to him by his father, Raman Rao sir's grandfather, and he had lost it. When he had lost it? He had lost it 8 years before Bhagwan took birth, actually. Somewhere in the 1918, sometime. Yeah, he had lost it that time. And here was Bhagwan bringing that talisman and giving it to him. And then the master stroke. Swami says, it is because all these years you have very steadfastly prayed to Lord Balaji, Lord Venkateshwara, that you have finally come to me. Swami says. And after that day, his father made, I think, almost some 30 trips to Puttaparthi, which outnumbered his trips to Tirupati till then. Yes. I mean, those were the instances where you saw, whenever I think about this Swami beyond time and place, I mean, anything you would see Bhagwan do. And as a Sadguru, you know, but why he would do? He would do so that we know that it is only one. It is only one God. You know, in that one instance, so many things Swami achieved.
Yeah, I think it's not just that it is only one God, but I remember what Swami Dayanand Saraswati had told here during one of the Guru Purnima festival recently, where he said, the paradox is probably because people think there is only one God and they start personifying him in a single form and name. He said, that is why Sanatana Dharma always says, there is only God.
Only God. Beautiful. Absolutely. Because as they say, you know, we keep asking, where is God, where is God, where is God? You should ask the question, where is he not?
Exactly.
Where is he not?
In fact, Bishu, you were mentioning about, you know, Jnana Murtim. And Swami says, Advaita Darshanam Jnanam.
Yes.
That is the true vision of Advaita.
Yeah, if you can explain that, Giridhar.
The most beautiful aspect of having Sadguru as both your Guru and the Lord is that it is only the Sadguru who is capable of clarifying some of these most intricate and difficult, phrases in the Upanishads, in the Vedas, which otherwise are very easily misinterpreted.
Correct.
Based on one's own limited knowledge and understanding. It is only the perspective which the Sadguru provides, which is the purest, ultimate, because the Vedic slokas or the Upanishad itself had emanated from the source.
Correct.
Through the great seers and rishis as the mouthpiece for the same.
Yeah.
So that source itself has come as Sadguru or as Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. So it is our greatest good fortune that we have the Lord Himself telling us what is the true meaning behind each of these Upanishadic and Vedic dictum, and not just Upanishad and Vedas, but scriptures from all over the world. And in this regard, Swami has clarified what really is the practice of Advaita. In one discourse, Swami simplifies and says so beautifully, he says, see, it is not possible to practice Karma Advaita. Karma Advaita means to see Advaita in the physical world of action. You will have somebody who will be, you know, a janitor in your block. You will have the Prime Minister of the country on one side. You will have your Managing Director on one side. You will have the florist on one side. You know, there are different people doing different works, different professions and all that. It is not possible to have financial equality or economic equality of everybody.
Yeah, it's not possible practically.
Yeah, it is not possible to say, oh, there is only one without a second, so let the Prime Minister and the janitor be on the same page.
Yes.
Each one does their job and their role to perfection. In fact, Swami narrates a very interesting Chinnakatha where he says that a king goes and prays to God, and when God appears before him and grants him a boon, he says, Lord, make everybody in my kingdom just like me.
Yes.
He was thinking that if everybody becomes like him, they'll be happy. So God said, are you sure that this is what you want? The king said, absolutely, God, this is what I want. I want everybody to be happy. So let everybody in my kingdom become like me. And God said, okay, then I grant it to you. And he goes back from his penance in the forest to his kingdom. And to his utter shock and dismay, he sees palaces everywhere, but the roads are not cleaned, the garbage is not moved, there is nobody to supply water, there is nobody to supply milk, there are no farmers to grow crops, because everybody has got riches, nobody is doing work. So in no time they found that, the whole system of the society simply collapsed. And he ran back to the forest and again started calling out to God. And when God appeared this time, he said, Lord, please set everything back to what it was.
Yes.
It was perfect in your plan. And my only prayer is, let there be morality in society and let there be love and respect and regard for each other in the society. That's all I want. Let everybody be contented. And God gave him that blessing, and it is said that his kingdom flourished very beautifully. Through this Chinnakatha, Swami makes it very clear that Karma Advaita is not practical, otherwise the society will not run. But what is practical or practice of Advaita is Bhava Advaita. Swami says, if you constantly remind yourself that there is only one Atman which powers every single being, every single aspect of this entire creation is powered by a single Atman, just like we have in this room, the tube lights, the air conditioner, the fans, this mic, the speakers, the computer. But everything does their own independent roles, but all of them are powered by single electricity. There is no fan electricity, there is no computer electricity, yes. There is no mic electricity, which is separate. There is one electricity which powers all the gadgets here. In the same way, if we have this constant feeling that there is one divinity, one Atman, which powers the entire creation, and we function from that perspective, what happens is, whether it is a janitor, or whether it is a prime minister, or whether it is anybody of whatever nature of work they are doing, or class and society they belong to, my underlying principle or approach towards them will be of unconditional love. In recognition of that unity.
Yes.
But yet, I will do my duty, he will do his duty.
Correct.
How beautiful the society will be then.
Yes, absolutely.
This is what we have seen in Swami.
Yes, sir.
Really.
In fact, the practice of this leads, as Sir just mentioned, this is Swami actually showed these, you know, qualities in a very physical way.
Correct.
I remember an experience in Trai Vrindavan, if I'm not mistaken, where Swami one day was walking down the steps and suddenly he stopped and slowly and carefully stepped over something and he stood there. And as students were rushing for the Trai session, you know, there is a mad rush to get into the Trai hall to get the first place so that they can get the chance to do Swami's Pada Seva in the Trai Vrindavan. As the students were rushing, Swami would stand there and stop each one of them and ask them to carefully cross over something. So people started wondering what is there that Swami is asking every student to stop and carefully cross over. There was a line of ants, you know, which were just moving around, and Swami was so careful that students should not stamp the ants or cause any harm to them. And he said, see, in what beautiful, disciplined way these ants are all walking, so be careful not to hurt them and step over and go carefully. This was the instruction of Bhagwan. In that one could see how Swami was seeing himself in everything.
And not just human beings.
Not just human beings. In insects, in another experience I remember is, once in Kulwansal, there was a housefly which was sitting on Swami's nose.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the senior professors got up to shoo away the housefly because it might cause some irritation to Swami or whatever. You know, as soon as Sir got up, Swami immediately was very stern with him and said, hey, sit down. And he said, if this housefly does not seek refuge in me, in whom else will it seek?
Oh my God. Beautiful. Wow.
You know, so Swami reflected in a very physical way this Bhava Advaita.
Wow.
The underlying principle that, yes, it is the same life principle that permeates everything, and that love, regard and respect for life, life forms, is something phenomenal. And we saw that day in and day out. Swami showed that with, not just, like Sir mentioned, not just with human beings, but with every life form that came by. Swami would, the tenderness with which, I remember another, you know, these memories are just flooding.
Yes, sure, go on.
There is, I remember that scene when a sparrow, a small, cute little sparrow, you know, just hopped and stood in front of Swami, one darshan session, and Swami was sitting on his chair and so beautifully with all his loving glance looking at the sparrow, and the sparrow was looking at Swami. You know, that scene was so wonderful.
Yes.
And the love that permeated the air, that moment, looking at this interaction between the Lord of the universe and a cute, tiny little creation of his, that sparrow.
Yes.
And how much love he had for that sparrow. And I don't know what love the sparrow had for Swami. Because even the sparrow looked almost transfixed.
Yes.
You know, transfixed her eyes on the Lord's form.
Lord.
And it was so beautiful to see that.
Amazing. In fact, I am reminded of what Brother K.M. Ganesh mentioned a few days back in Sai Kulwanthal. He said there was an occasion in Trai Vrindavan when Bhagwan was there talking to a few devotees, and suddenly there was some clamor because a group of monkeys appeared there, and everyone was scared, you know, what would they do, because monkeys can get notorious, and Swami was there talking to devotees and all that. And when Swami saw that, what Swami did is Swami asked one of the boys to go inside and get a bunch of peanuts. So when the peanuts were brought, now Swami held the peanuts in his hand and he stretched out his hand. And now everyone thought, what is going to happen now? You know, monkeys, you know, if they come and sort of rush and they try to snatch those nuts from Swami's hand, it could be something not very pleasant. But they saw when Swami stretched out his hand, that group of monkeys fell into a single file, and then very obediently each monkey apparently came and took one nut and went back. Just imagine that scene, you know. Each monkey coming, taking one gourd nut and stepping back. And it just showed me also, that is the power of pure love, you know. God is telling that, you know, he can transform even a monkey, he can straighten whatever. Why can't it do that with us, you know?
Absolutely.
And we've seen, I mean, what the Sadhguru can do is really amazing. And as you're mentioning, we can go on in this shloka. You have Dvandatitam, you have Gaganat Sadrisham, and Tattva Masyadi Laksham. What is your view on this, Giridhar? Tattva Masyadi Laksham?
I think, you know, the basic meaning of this phrase is that there are these four, you know, Veda Vakyas, Mahavakyas, like Aham Brahmasmi, Prajnanam Brahma, Ayamatma Brahma and Tattvamasi. Depending on the sadhaka's level of understanding or his perception, these four statements help the individual in recognizing his own self. And Swami was always like that. Paths were many. Yes. And in a single discourse, just imagine his task. There were thousands of devotees, each belonging to different ways of, you know, sadhana, and they had their own mindsets and their own understanding of spirituality. And here was a Lord, in a single discourse, he had to cater to every single human being. Yet, when he would thunder, Divyatma Swarupallara, and he meant it, and that message would go deep into every heart and shake us right from the roots in understanding ourselves. Tattva Masyadi Laksham means, Laksham means goal. Sadguru or Bhagwan is verily the goal of all these four Mahavakyas.
Yes.
When, what is the direction given by these four Mahavakyas about our true reality, that reality is verily embodied by the Sadguru.
Bhagwan. I mean, basically, to put it very simply, he is the goal. He is the ultimate.
He is our ultimate goal, yes.
Of all spiritual endeavors, whatever we are trying to achieve, ultimately, as they say, seeking God is the greatest adventure. It is the greatest romance, the greatest adventure, it is the greatest achievement. Everything, that is the goal.
To put it in a very simple way, there are several gurus, there were several masters. Through their own sadhana, they have achieved what to achieve in life. So any disciple goes to them, they keep insisting that they should follow the path which they have tread. Because they are familiar with that particular path.
Correct.
But in Swami, we find the combination of all paths.
Wow.
Whether you are following the path of Karma Marga, or Bhakti Marga, or Jnana Marga. He never said you change your path.
Correct.
He has guided you in that particular path. So that you will, following that particular path, you will achieve the same objective.
Yes.
The goal of all goals is He Himself.
Yes.
So you will achieve that just by treading that particular path. So it is something like a Triveni Sangam, where you have the combination of karma, bhakti and jnana.
Yes.
And anyone can get their lessons from Him.
Wow.
Beautiful.
In fact, what you mentioned is really so profound, because what you said is, you know, every guru obviously will know only little bit.
Yeah.
Little bit of that universal wisdom, but the Sadguru will know everything. So as you very rightly said, each person will guide you, say, you know, this path is not good, this path is good, because his knowledge is limited. He would have achieved it through one or two ways. But here is a Sadguru who will tell you all the ways. He knows about everything, the in and out of everything, and you can never be wrong.
In fact, I had an opportunity to listen to one such realized master. And he was saying that even a realized master cannot understand the nuance of the entire creation.
Correct.
It is only Sadguru and the Paripurna avatar, like Bhagwan Baba, who have the complete picture, end to end, of the entire creation. And the mystery of the whole creation, in all its entirety, like Swami says, Anoraniyan Mahato Mahiyan, it is only He who knows end to end. You know, because he's the one who created the blueprint, not just the blueprint, but
yes.
He himself manifested as the whole creation.
Yeah. Wow. It's really, every time, you know, you can only sort of bow down and just offer your gratitude and for having given us this amazing chance. And it's not only us, it's for each one of us who are contemporaries of Bhagwan to really make use of this opportunity. And as Bhagwan says in that discourse towards the end, Swami says, there are four things which are very important. Teja Durjana Samsargam, Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, Kuru Punya Ahoratnam, and Smara Nitya Anityatam, which means always seek the company of the good, give up the company of the bad, and do good deeds both day and night, and remember that which is lasting. Then Swami says, what is a good deed? Good deed is doing selfless service to others. And that is the good deed, Swami says. And he says, you have to take refuge in God. Let God be your guru, your path, your God. Adore Him, obey His commands, and offer Him your grateful homage. Hold Him fast in your memory. This is the easiest way to realize Him as what? As your own reality. This is the one and only way. That's how Bhagwan ends this beautiful discourse. So much for us to really ruminate on. And as Sir mentioned, not only ruminate, but really practice. Take that sincere effort to translate some of these into our lives. And I think we should pray to Bhagwan for giving us that energy, that enthusiasm, and that deep interest, so that we can walk on this path as laid on by Him. Probably we will conclude by listening to this beautiful rendering of Brahmanandam Shlokam by our own voice. On this segment of Thursday Life and this entire day of Thursday Life programs from the studios of Radio Sai. Thank you so much for being with us the entire day, right from the morning. As far as outside, inside, deep inside is concerned, we'll continue to have this discussion on Bhagwan as a Sadguru on the coming Thursday too. As we near the festival of Guru Purnima, let us spend more time dwelling on these beautiful facets of the Divine. So thank you so much for being with us, and as always you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and even as a sign off you'll continue to listen to a drama entitled 8 Jewels, which was presented by the devotees from Thailand on 25th May 2013 in front of Bhagwan in Sai Kulwant Hall. So enjoy listening to it. Let every second of our lives be spent ruminating on His glory, chanting His name, and filling our lives with His love. Thank you so much, and Sai Ram.